Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Let's face it, we all got aches and pains from shoveling massive amounts of snow this week. And I found that the older you get, the more aches and pains you get from shoveling massive amounts of snow. For instance, at this moment, I have aches and pains over 98.4% of my entire body. Good thing our guest today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote of Goodemote Physical Therapy. If you got an injured or aching back or knee or shoulder or elbow or whatever, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org, but the number is 800-348-2551. Oh, it hurts me. Physical therapy coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 350 spine specialists with a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole-body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based therapy and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance, and the programs are designed to prevent injury and to improve your performance in sports and recreation. You got a question? You got an ache? You got a pain? Call 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number is 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
You know, I don't want to point fingers, but every time you're on the show, I have more aches and pains. And I don't want to blame you, but I somehow think it's your fault.
I'll take responsibility for that.
You know, I think it's just a psychological thing. I start thinking about, oh, gosh, this hurts, that hurts. So, you know,
right.
You know, once again, I think the last time you were on, we were just a couple of days away from either before or after digging out a massive amount of snow. And here we are again. And the old back is barking today. What's the what's the proper way to shovel snow?
When in doubt, stick your butt out.
Really?
Yes. So the most common thing I see when people is they're kind of slouched all over, hunched in the back, and they are not using proper form. And the other thing, the big thing, is they use one side. Instead of switching hand position, they just keep going with the left arm forward or the right arm forward.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Do that for an hour.
Yeah, so. You know, what gets me is the roof raking, because your arms are over your shoulders for long periods of time, and that it's like doing shoulder presses, and you overdo it, and you just got that strain in your shoulder. It goes away in like 6 months. You know, the older you get. Hey, by the way, I always read this in your introduction. And maybe you can answer this for me. It says you're one of 350 spine specialists with a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. Why, you know, after all these years, why aren't there more than 350?
Well, some of it is because of how difficult it is to go through the program, in part because it's, you know, most of the people who are doing it are employed. So when I went, I had almost a four-month break from employment to do it, and I was young and single, so it was, you know, an easier thing to do. And at the time it was in Minnesota, so I was in Maryland and I had to, you know, pack up my bags and move for a few months. And so that's probably the biggest obstacle. Prior to that, though, there's a whole series of classes you have to take before you can even apply to get into the diploma program. And most people stop at the level of credential program, which is one notch below. And that's, there's thousands of credential therapist, but only a few of us dips.
The story of McKenzie is an interesting one, and you and I have talked about it from time to time on your appearances, but very briefly, explain what this McKenzie method is.
So the thing that I was most impressed with McKenzie was it's kind of a simplistic assessment. So basically McKenzie discovered through trial and error a way to evaluate people's backs and categorize them into certain diagnoses that respond to treatment in a certain way. His first patient, Mr. Smith, had sciatica, and in the 1950s, the kind of treatment of choice was heat, ultrasound, and massage. and it was not having any effect on him. But the patient that was ahead of him had an ankle sprain, so the table had been adjusted to elevate. And when Mr. Smith went in and laid down on the table, his back was arched backwards. And in the 50s, they thought this was a bad idea. But while he was laying there, his sciatic pain went away. And so McKenzie, being what I consider a genius at the time, he applied that principle to everybody. Now, bending backwards does not work for everybody, but it helps develop that technique of assessment. So basically, you find a symptom, and then you do something with the symptom, and then you come back and check it. That's a real simplistic way of doing it, but yeah. It's an incredibly effective way too. So the spine has certain patterns to it, and when people move in certain ways, I can tell honestly within a question or two or in a movement or two what's going on with their back. And McKenzie's are known for treating specifically lower back disorders, but spine, so we do neck as well. And they branched off in the last 5 to 10 years to include the peripheral joints as well. But my training was primarily in the spine. So that's really my main forte.
Now, as I understand it, McKenzie was not universally, that method was not universally accepted. There was some controversy, at least in the beginning, right?
Correct. Yeah. So the other thing that really kind of shifted him into the spotlight was there's a specific condition called the lateral shift, and that's usually when you have a gigantic disc herniation. It literally tilts your body to a side, and it comes along with extreme pain. And in the 70s, for example, they would put people in bed rest and use traction in the hospital to help these patients. And McKenzie, on stage in front of a whole bunch of orthopedic and neurosurgeons, he would fix them in a matter of, 20, 30 minutes total. And so that really got people's attention. And then just through years of him going around teaching and talking about his ideas, he wrote books. And so he started to get more attention. And then there was the MRI machine became more popular. And in the 1980s and 90s, there was a doctor down in New Orleans that started to have McKenzie's assess a patient and then predict what was going to be on the MRI. And in one of those studies, the McKenzie therapists were 87% effective in their judgment. I know. So when I worked with a spine surgeon, he called me his inexpensive MRI because I would evaluate patients and confirm or deny what he was thinking the condition was.
Well, that's very interesting. So, that's really, never heard that one. Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. If it's physical therapy on the program. At our number is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, Matt, let's take a couple of calls before the first break because the lines are really picking up here. Kathleen in Summers, Connecticut. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question specific to a lower back and SI joint injury that I had a few years ago. I work as a nurse. I'm on my feet for probably 10-plus hours a day, and I'm in my early second trimester of pregnancy. I stay very physically fit with like yoga and, mostly like biking and like low impact walking. And my concern is that, as my pregnancy and the weight that I gain from the baby advances, I might have a flare up of that injury. I spent about a year in physical therapy at the time of the original injury. And I wasn't sure if you had any suggestions as to, how to keep my back safe at this point, whether or not I need to kind of reevaluate with my physical therapist or if I just kind of have to have a wait and see approach. And I'll take my call off the air just to open up the lines unless you have any questions.
Fair enough, Kathleen. Well, let's see if Matt has any questions for you before we let you go.
No, I can speak about my – sure.
Thanks, Kathleen.
So the first part with the SI joint there's a lot of people who have been diagnosed with SI joints, and my training would go away from that as a primary source of people's pain unless it's right on the SI joint itself. So the fact that she had lower back pain and SI joint pain, I would probably lean towards the lower back as the main source of the problems. And as far as what to do, pregnancy is a tricky one because as you get more and more pregnant, the ligaments get softer and softer in preparation for childbirth. And with that, obviously, comes the weight gain. I'm not as concerned about the weight gain part of it. I'm more concerned if she did have an injury to the SI joint, that the ligaments will be getting looser again in preparation for delivery. So one of the most important things to do throughout pregnancy, and just this is in general for spine health, is maintain mobility. So it would be checking range of motion, and the lumbar spine basically is a forward bend, a backwards bend, and then moving the hips to the right and moving the hips to the left. It's not a side bend where you're trying to put your hand down toward your knees. It's literally just shifting your weight off to one hip and then to the other. As she gets further into the pregnancy, bending forward will become difficult, if not impossible. So, but that's also the least important of the movements for me personally. So I would have her doing just two or three backwards bends literally every time she went to the restroom, just to maintain that kind of mobility in the lumbar spine. And then when it comes to exercise, low impact is fine. And whatever your normal exercise routine is, you can go all the way as long as the body doesn't inhibit you. So my wife was actually trying to jog. I say trying because it wasn't much of a jog when she was 9 months pregnant. And that's definitely extreme, but she's European, so they're a little bit different than us Americans.
All right, fair enough.
And so I would do, you know, everything I could as far as exercise goes. And if and when some lower back pain started, that would be a definite time to just, especially if she has a physical therapist she's already worked with, to schedule that appointment. And one last thing is there are physical therapists that have done a lot of work with pregnant women. And just because of my career, I've done a lot of work with pregnant women. And it is different in regards to like the treatments you're recommending and whatnot. And I'm not a big fan of doing a lot of, quote, stretching. Because again, the ligaments are getting prepped for pregnancy and delivery, not pregnancy, but delivery. So I would be more encouraging of low impact exercise, whatever the level prior to was, no added exercise to this at this stage. It wouldn't be worthwhile.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy today on Vox Pop. We'll take a break right now. Then we'll hit the email bag and the phones at 800-348-2551. And I see the emails contain many words I can't say. So this will be Adventures in Bad Radio once again. And that's coming up after this. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy. You ready for me to butcher some technical terms now, Matthew?
Could I mention one thing first?
Sure.
About the shoveling?
Yeah.
I offer a program at my house, Ray, where you can come by and shovel my sidewalk for me, and I can check your technique if you like.
That's very funny. You know what? I'll send my children. It'll be the first time they ever shovel. All right, here we go. This is from Wes. Wes, I have superficial siderosis, which is a condition where there is a bleed into the spinal column. The blood breaks down as it can't escape due to the blood-brain barrier. As the blood breaks down, the iron is toxic to the cerebellum and root nerves coming off the spinal column. I recently had COVID. I'm having further problems with walking, standing, going downstairs. New symptoms are balance issues, sitting on a stool, and hand tremors. Can this be a result of COVID? And if so, any idea how long it will last? And are there any exercises I can do that will help in returning to my pre-COVID state? That might be a tough one for you to diagnose over the phone, but go ahead, Matthew Goodemote.
So I have not heard anything about COVID causing any of those things and haven't seen that in the clinic. And as far as the medical condition he's talking about, that's definitely outside of my scope, and I have never treated anyone with that. So I am not sure. My guess is there is something connected to getting sick and having that condition that's affecting, especially if it's going to the cerebellum, that will definitely affect balance and things. But that's going to be more to me a medical question and somebody who's treated it, because I would just be guessing, and obviously that's not a smart thing to do.
Right, no, it's, like you that, make a so. Point. This one's from Joe, subject heading slouching and Hageman. I'm a 53-year-old man working from my desk at home during COVID. My wife keeps nagging me, but I just can't bring myself to do my prescribed physical therapy exercises at home. Would you please ask Matthew if he can recommend a brand of skinny jeans that will make my lumbopelvic hip complex look anteriorly rotated? And that's from Joe and Hageman. Thank you, Joe.
So I do not have any skinny jean recommendations.
Fair enough. I'm glad about
that. One of the things
One of the things I like to recommend, however, is an alarm. So, you know, something on the phone or computer that reminds our patients to stand up and correct their posture. And then the other big one is connecting back health to something you do every day, like go to the bathroom. So after washing your hands, do some backwards bends, which is similar to an anterior tilt. So I would recommend.
All right. This one is signed In Pain in Hudson. I run a seasonal ice cream parlor. Scooping ice cream's hard work. And every year when I close the shop in September, I have quite severe tendonitis in both wrists and tennis elbow. Mm. Is there a good way to scoop ice cream to protect these tendons and nerves? Are there exercises available to help distribute the workload to other muscle groups? Can seeing a doctor help me out? You know, that's a legit issue.
Yeah.
I mean, scooping hard ice cream is not easy.
No. So there's a few things that would be similar to what we do with a tennis racket, for example. So the tennis elbow can come from improper fitting of a racket. And so one simple thing would be to get scoopers that would have a wider grip, perhaps, just as a during the season. And there are, I'm sure, devices, just because we have these things, you know, where you can get adaptive equipment for people who have injuries and whatnot. So I'm sure there's a scooper out there that someone has invented or created. But the most important thing would be the off-season training. So just like an athlete needs to train in the off-season to be ready for their season, the ice cream season, I would have him doing a boatload of strengthening exercises in the winter time, the down months. And when it comes to tendonitis, one of the worst things that people do is they actually rest. So when you have an injury, you can rest for 24, 48 hours, of course. But the longer the break with the tendons, the less tolerant the tendon becomes. And then people get into these cycles of tendonitis, then it feels better, then it's bad again. And so part of it is resting too much. Mm. And then another problem is the pushing through, of course. So people do it and they ignore the issue. But with tendons, there's a few things nutritionally, having collagen, which is meat-based products, with vitamin C, and doing that a couple times a day would be beneficial just for the purpose of keeping the tendons healthy nutritionally. But exercise-wise, I would have him doing a lot of strengthening exercises for the forearm specifically. And then the last part of the question was about changing technique, and there would be a way that would be very feasible during slow times and not as much during the fast times, because when it's fast, you're just trying to get things done. And so you're less likely to be compliant with a proper technique. But the way I would try to do it is to encourage more shoulder use, where when pulling, it would be kind of like you're in the gym doing a row machine where you're trying to use your upper back muscles to pull. It'd be similar to that kind of thing with ice cream. Those would be my best things. But the most important thing I would really stress would be the off-season training, and truly take it like an athlete would who's getting prepped for the season. I would have him doing strengthening the entire winter time after maybe a couple weeks of break after, you know, September or whatever, then right into October through until the season starts.
There you go. All right, one more email. We actually have a huge stack here, and we'll try to get to more, but we have also a full bank of calls, and we need to get to those. So this will be the last email for a little while here. This is from Patrick in North Adams, and Patrick says, I had a nerve conduction test done recently that determined I have a degree of ulnar nerve impingement. I get tingling and numbness in my left hand when using hand tools, wrenches, screwdrivers, etc., which is critical to my job. I was given two choices, suck it up or surgery to relocate the nerve.
Oh.
Can physical therapy help with this? And that's from Patrick.
Absolutely. So the first thing, the ulnar nerve is the funny bone nerve. So when we bang it on the elbow, that's the one we hit. And it goes down towards the pinky. And I'm saying that because if that's where the symptoms are, then it's the ulnar nerve. Now, if he's getting symptoms over his thumb while he's working, despite having some testing that says it's the ulnar nerve, that's a different nerve. And so doing an ulnar nerve transplant would be a complete waste of time because it's the wrong nerve. But what I would do is, there's a lot of physical therapy things can be done, manual therapy in particular, working on the soft tissue of the forearm and above the elbow. So all through the tricep area, there's a whole bunch of restrictive areas that we would see in something like this. And I have worked with this condition, and it does typically respond really well to manual therapy. And then afterwards, it would be working on retraining some things. So how he's gripping, how he's holding, and things like that. And certainly, if he can't do it during the work, then when he's not working.
Yeah.
And one quick thing about what he can do on his own, like it's a similar to manual therapy, but it would be getting a lacrosse ball, which is a hard rubber ball, and putting it up against the wall and then rubbing his tricep area with that ball. And I guarantee it wouldn't feel good because I'm sure he has a lot of tension and restriction in that area. And then also working down in the forearm as well. But there's definitely things that can be done in physical therapy that would help this.
Physical therapist Matthew Goodemote is our guest today on Vox Pop. And I'll give you the number, even though the lines are completely full. When you hear somebody hang up, that's a good time to call. 800-348-2551. Dave is in Woodstock. Dave, you're on.
Hi. One of my legs feels a little bit tired, kind of, compared to the other one. Kind of like at a deficit for many years it's been happening. And rather fit rather than not fit. And I do some massaging on it. It's gotten a little bit better maybe 9 months or a year ago. I've when I do the Achilles stretches, if that's what they're called, after that I put my toes, kind of my toenails on the floor, and I go up and down that way about 30 times.
Okay. Where do you get the tiredness?
In the calf, mainly.
In the calf.
It's kind of always there, just in the background.
Yeah, so the calf can be coming from the back. So your S1 nerve root comes down the back part of your calf. And so the first thing I'd want to do is to check that, to clear it. And I've had patients who came in with a big toe numb, and that was their only symptom, and that was the L5 nerve root. So it's just worth it to clear the spine. And there's a few things, just basic backwards bending, especially if you've been sitting a lot, and to see if that has an effect on that calf. So if it's a muscular thing, it's going to be with activity, not inactivity, that it's going to feel unusual. So if you're getting it primarily with sitting or sitting-related activities, I think spine more than I think calf. Once I've cleared the spine, then I would actually go after the part where you're lifting up on your toes, the strengthening part, more than I would for the stretching part. And then the big thing, if it's not coming from... It's hard to do over the phone, but you would want to get an evaluation to check your motion.
Okay.
And specifically, like, one thing you can try at home is when you feel that symptom, and especially when it's the strongest, try a simple thing like bending backwards a bunch of times and see what effect it has on you. And if you notice that it has even a slight diminishment of the symptoms, I would just have you bending backwards like 10 times a day, get up from the chair every time you go to the bathroom, that kind of thing. So it's pretty easy to tell if it's coming from the spine. You just provoke it, and then you move your spine and leave your leg alone.
I don't know. Maybe
the last thing I would say is not coming from.
Go ahead, Matthew.
If it's not coming from the spine, then I think it would be doing some foam rolling on it.
Okay, David.
Okay, on the knee, on that side, the knee, also at rest, kind of, it has a little bit of twinges of not even pain, just when at rest at different times. It's occasionally after sitting for a while, so that knee has a little bit of twingy kind of stuff, but not on exercise.
The only other thing that would happen during sitting, and partly that description helps, it could be circulation as well. So that would require more of like a medical intervention, though. And there's times, for example, when people are riding on airplanes where they're getting a blood clot, and it does tend to present in the calf. So if you're getting it with sitting and it feels like a pinch behind the knee, that's worth getting evaluated, because blood clots obviously can be quite serious. And it may not be a blood clot, but you may just have some varicose veins forming or something where you're having less circulation there. So, but the sitting part is that's the piece that doesn't fit with a muscle, because why would a muscle get tight or sore or anything like that when you're sitting still? And the answer is it doesn't. So then you go, the spine would be my first thing, but because of what you said behind the knee, that can be circulatory, and it would be worth talking to a doctor about. If they poo-poo me, great, it's no big deal, but it's better to get it checked and have somebody test it than not.
Well,
and
Dave,
then find out later.
Yeah. Go finish it up there, Matthew. That's good.
Just find out later that it was a clot, and then it's way more serious about it. So.
Well, Dave, thanks for the call, and now we go to Carol in Albany. Carol, you're on with Matthew Goodemote.
Yes, hi, thank you. I have recently been diagnosed with degenerative disc disease. I've been doing impact aerobics for like 25 years. Is that harmful for someone with my condition? Should I give that up? I also have osteopenia, which is why I've been doing impact aerobics for my bone health.
Yeah. So the first
thing
what
should I do?
If you're over 30, you have degenerative disc disease.
Oh, yes.
Because that's a normal part of getting older. So that's
right.
The diagnosis for degeneration is there's very specific things like waking up in the morning being stiff and sore. Degeneration of the spine does not hurt when you bend forward, does not hurt when you sit. So if those are things that are bothering
correct.
you just, yeah. So that's not degeneration it's causing. It's something else. You just happen to get an x-ray that said degeneration. And so that's the first
okay.
part. But the second part is that impact is not generally a problem for the spine unless while you're doing that impact, it's hurting your spine. So if you notice while you're doing those exercise classes, and I mean at the moment you're doing them, that it's bothering you, then I would say, wait, we got to stop. But even then, it's usually just one movement in the class or two movements, and the rest of them are fine. So if you're not having any problem with the class, then it means you're not having any problems, so carry on. And high intensity
okay.
is good for the bone health, but lifting weights is too. And so you want to get into a program where you actually learn how to lift weights properly and do exercises that strengthen the muscles. And although impact mm-hmm. is good for you, like the classes, I would encourage you to find strength training. If you're around this area, we offer. If you're not, then find somebody who can teach you safely how to lift with osteopenia.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks. Good news. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol. We appreciate the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest, and Rich is in Utica. Rich.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I got a question about my knees. I have intermittent mild pain, not awful much. And at one time, years ago, they said I had the inside of the knees, the cartilage are worn on the insides, not that common in men. But and I was just wondering about a few things like any shoe inserts or how to walk that might help or any exercises or supplements.
Yeah, so when it comes to the cartilage in the knees, one of the most important things to know about it is it gets its nutrition through movement. So exercise is very important to continue. And oftentimes I'll go out and do talks at senior centers, and one of my most important things I pass on is people have knee pain, so they back off activity, and that actually makes knees hurt worse, doesn't actually help. So one of my favorite exercise is a chair squat, which is literally just sitting down in the chair and standing up. And you start off with 5 repetitions and keep doing all the way, you know, until you can get to 20 repetitions, but build up gradually, like 5 repetitions a day for the first week and then 7 for the second week, so that eventually you get to 20 repetitions. Nutritionally, just a healthy, balanced diet is important for cartilage. So there are some studies that show chondroitin and glucosamine can be beneficial, but there's also some things that say it doesn't do anything. So I wouldn't spend a lot of money on something like that. Same thing, collagen, which is just basically gelatin and meat-based products, they will have things that are good for your cartilage. But the most important thing is movement. And then the second most important thing would be strength and doing exercises to keep the muscles of the legs strong, and specifically the hip pelvis area, and then the thigh area for the knees specifically. And as far as walking goes, walking is fine. The best kind of safest exercise for the knees is cycling. But if you're walking, I'm not a big advocate of a lot of support for shoes, and I'm even less of an advocate of cushion in the shoes. So I want just a kind of a comfortable shoe, a comfortable sneaker. And then walking programs, it's generally to start off, if you haven't been doing one, it's to start off with just a short distance and be successful at that. And then, like I said, with the exercise of the chair squats, gradually add to it. And that's kind of the basics of what I would recommend to start with.
Rich, thank you very much for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. An email here before we take our break, and then we'll run through a couple of more emails and hit the phones. This one is from our buddy Nan in Wilton. And Nan says, pain is in the ball of the foot. Feels like I'm walking barefoot on crushed slate, whether walking or not on my feet. How can I deal with this? 1, I have wide toe area. 2, I have a wide foot. 3, second toe is longer than the big toe. 4, 62 years old, 50 pounds overweight, but always very physical, on my feet a lot. And that is from Nan in Wilton.
So the ball of the foot, I'm not sure if she means the base of the big toe ball of the foot or the arch of the foot.
and depending on where would determine what is probably going on there. So the plantar fascia attaches from the heel to the base of the big toe, so it's possible something's happening there, but there's a whole slew of muscles and ligaments that go in the bottom of the foot, and any number of them could be the source of the problem. The first thought I have is to get a lacrosse ball again and do some rolling on the bottom of the foot just to see if there's a particular spot of soreness, not being super aggressive on that spot because if it is irritated and you can irritate it more, but as a way to kind of massage the foot and then doing some basic foot exercises. The easiest one to do is just balancing on one foot. And when you do that, the muscles of the feet will just kind of contract on their own to help maintain the balance. And then I would also work on the calf muscles and just go through the calf muscles to see. There are muscles that start up in your calf that go down to the base of the big toe. So it's possible that the flexor hallucis longus, for example, the tendon insertion is at the base of the toe, and it could be something's happening there. And then the final thing is as we get older, the muscles do atrophy, and the padding in our foot does also atrophy for some, and in which case that can just lead to a more uncomfortable, you know, if you're bearing weight barefooted a lot. But I still am actually a big advocate of taking time around the house to walk barefooted for everyone, because I think it's important for our foot to touch the ground. So,
okay.
That's a good.
Did you say flexor hallucis longus?
I did.
That's an old emperor, I think, from Rome. Hey, Matthew Goodemont, we'll take a break here, and then we'll hit the email and then the phones. It's physical therapy today. The number is 800-348-2551. Fox Pop on WAMC Physical Therapy. Matthew Goodemont is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Tell you what, we have so many emails here, Matt, that we'll just do two. It's all we can do, and then we'll try to get to as many calls as we can. This one's from John. John says, I'm 65, 5 months out from rotator cuff surgery, where they repaired a mostly severed supraspinatus. Yeah, that's the one. I'm having great trouble regaining external rotation. The exercises have given me golfer's elbow. Can you suggest an external rotation exercise that would not aggravate the elbow? And that is from John. Go ahead.
If he's lacking the mobility, he still needs to work on that because it's going to impact the elbow. So the external rotation of the shoulder, we do just a lot of manual therapy, and sometimes there's some tension in muscles on the back part of the arm that are tensing up. They're trying to protect us, and so they tense up too much. And in that case, it would be, you know, doing some manual therapy and then teaching that good old lacrosse ball again to help him maintain it throughout the day. There's not any real, like, I don't have any breakthrough exercises for the muscle because it'd be important to see actually what movement he has and how much range of motion he has. But I will say the external rotation, the further out he goes with it being lost, the harder it is to get back. So it would be something that requires help, and he should be having a physical therapist help him to stretch and, again, work on the soft tissue. And there's a lot of soft tissue around the chest area, the shoulder joint itself, underneath the shoulder blade. I also personally work on the mid-back area because the thoracic spine helps to keep the shoulder blade moving. And one last thing about it is that sometimes it's limited. Let's say that differently. Sometimes the range of motion is there passively but not actively, and that's due to strength, or it's due to a coordination issue. And sometimes the shoulder blade is not coordinating well with the shoulder joint.
Uh-huh.
And that's really where the restriction's coming from. So it really would be important to have somebody look at it. And a lot of times people are making progress, so they think they can handle it on their own.
But as he gets closer and closer to 6 months, it becomes harder and harder to do it without help.
Okay.
So I would encourage him to get help.
Fair enough. And just a note to anyone who emails the program, you know, try to keep it to one syllable, two syllable words tops. I don't read that well, but you know that. I've been on the air for years, and it's not going to get any better. This last email from Ramon in Montgomery. Ramon says, having sustained a non-break injury to a Lisfranc joint, is there any way, stretches otherwise, to mitigate repeat chronic episodes of grief and pain from a decades-old injury? And yes, it is aggravated, tied to barometric pressure. Is there a fix for that or anything else? Thanks in advance from Ramon.
So most of what the recent research is talking about is strengthening. So that's probably why I go to that a lot. So my general rule is mobility first. So I want to make sure the joints work, and I want to make sure the soft tissue works. And if that's all working properly and there's no added tensions or restrictions, then I go right into stability or strength. And then it's going to be depending on where the imbalances or weaknesses are. But generally speaking, even if they're chronic injuries, they respond well to some soft tissue work and then some strength training exercises.
Okay, Matthew Goodemot is our guest, and let's see how many calls we can get through here. Teresa in Chatham, you're on. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I have two questions related to a broken arm. 2 weeks ago, I broke both the radius and ulna in my right arm, and I needed surgery to set the bones. I had a nerve block during the surgery, and the most post-surgical pain I actually had was in my fingers as the nerve block wore off. But I have some continuing effects in my index finger and thumb, so I'm guessing a nerve is impinged. My question is, can I ignore that till I see my orthopedist at my scheduled post-surgical appointment in 1 week? That's my first question.
So to answer that one, it depends, because if the symptoms are getting worse and worse, then I would give them a call. Because it's only a week out, it's not likely that there's going to be any lasting damage, but it could be something they may want to recommend anti-inflammatory or some type of medicine to help with it. Are you in a cast right now?
It's not getting worse. It's just not getting better.
Right, but it's early. So when you have an injury, if there is an injury to a nerve, then it can take a few weeks. But swelling will often be the actual culprit. So you had a fracture, so there's going to be swelling in there. And depending on how much swelling you have, that could actually be the issue. And there is something you can do for that just by elevating your hand. So you would, you know, sit on the couch and have your arm up on the back, or have a bunch of pillows so your fingers are pointing towards the ceiling and your arm is above your heart, your elbow is above your heart. And just rest in that position and see a before and after. And if you notice that the finger feels better after you do that for 20 minutes, then I think that swelling is involved in this, and there is something you can and should be doing, which is elevating at least twice a day to try to minimize that.
Okay, question two, very quickly, Teresa.
Question two. So that was my dominant arm that was broken. So I'm trying to do with my left hand and arm things that I previously did with my right arm or both hands, and I'm beginning to feel various, you know, twinges and things in my shoulder and wrist and left side of my body. And I'm wondering if there's an argument for getting some occupational therapy or physical therapy in the near term for this weak side that I'm now overusing.
Yeah. There would be a lot of recommendations for that specifically, especially if you're unable to use your dominant side. And occupational therapists tend to focus on hand type of things and what you can do there, but they are good for the entire upper extremity, whereas PTs would be more inclined to do things with shoulders. There's definitely a crossover there for sure, but you mentioned OT, so that would probably be the direction to start with, although I don't want to bash PT because we could do it. I just think OTs are more commonly doing it than we would in this situation.
Teresa, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Abigail in Kingston. Abigail.
Abigail. Oh, wow. Thank you so much for calling. Love your sense of humor sometimes. Anyway, short story. 1988, New York City, working at the 92nd Street Y, having absolutely terrible, terrible back, lower back pain. I went to a sauna called the Paris Club, and I was sitting on a very low bench, and something told me to lean over and relax my head, put my head between my, behind my knees, and touch the instep of my foot. I did this. I was, but you have to be absolutely, terribly, wonderfully relaxed before you do any of this stuff. But that's what I recommend. It has, I have not, this is in 1989, I have never had a lower back pain, and any time I feel a glitch of it coming, I do the exercise. So I want to recommend it for
that's good
people.
Hey, Abigail, before we go too far with Matthew, just want to let you know the phrase that you used, not exactly, we had to bleep it out. So let's not, next time you call,
let's not
say that one again.
I accept that.
That would be good.
I accept that. I have a hard time being too serious.
All right, Matthew, so, what do you want to say to Abigail?
Well, that can work for some, but it definitely doesn't work for others. So if somebody had a herniated disc, for example, doing that maneuver, it's not the best advice because you can actually injure something like that. But if you have just lower back pain,
Well, it was very descriptive.
Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. Okay. Let's go to the next one. Tammy in Saratoga. Tammy, you're on. Hello.
Hi.
Don't swear.
Speaker, sorry.
Okay.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question was, I have two, but I saw a chiropractor, Dr. Ward, down in Long Beach, California, and he did a full body x-ray of me, and he was able to tell me things about my mom, and I just wondered if, I mean, what he said was accurate. I just wondered if that is at all possible.
There's some data about how we have familial connections. So there's some things genetically that our spine can develop in certain ways and whatnot. But I'm not sure about the rest. Just from a structural point of view, there is obviously some, we have genetic components similar to our parents. So there are some things that he may be able to see that are more common with women than they are with men, for example, and then therefore make some predictions about what to expect. So.
Well, he said that her mom did not acknowledge any of the good things that she had done, and it was definitely true. My other question was, I broke my jaw when I was 8, and I became type 1 diabetic when I was 9. Do you think there's any association with that? Because I hit my chin, so I'm thinking I totally realigned my spine.
Is that possible? It's not typically a connection because the pancreas would be the thing that's influenced by it. And I've never heard of a direct connection that way with it. So typically with a type 1 diabetes, it's obviously the insulin's not being developed in the pancreas. So I don't know how the spine would influence that because at that age, your pancreas is developed and whatnot. So I wouldn't know.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Tammy, thanks so much for the call. We go to Elizaville, and Diane, you're on.
Hi. I have a lot of inflammation in my iliac joints, and I do get some physical therapy for it. And I've noticed that if I'm prone on the table and the therapist is lifting my leg up straight so that it's perpendicular to my body, I feel a real tug, not uncomfortable, but a good muscle stretching tug on my hamstring muscle. And this puzzles me because if I'm standing in the shower, I can bend down. Well, even if I'm not in the shower, I can bend down and touch my knuckles to the floor. I mean, it's not just touch my toes. I can
wow.
get a good stretch.
Yeah,
and I don't understand why I can do it in one position with ease, and yet I can't get my leg past perpendicular if I'm lying flat. And so I was looking to hear if you could explain that.
Yes, you can. So it's two parts, probably three parts. Gravity may have something to do with it, but in a supine position when you're laying down and your pelvis is in a tilted position typically. So when you're bending forward, you get to use your spine, your hips, and your pelvis to go down and touch the floor. But when you're on the table, he's essentially eliminating the pelvis from flexing too much. So therefore, you're only going to get a hip joint range of motion. And the hip joint typically will only, with the leg straight, will only get to about 90 degrees. For some people who are really flexible, they can go further than that. But that's probably the biggest reason. The lumbar spine going into flexion. So there's people, when I have them checking the range of motion, I'll have them put their hands on the front of their thighs because some people won't flex their lower back. They'll keep it straight. And then they can get to that same type of position in standing that you're describing. But until they let their lumbar spine go and flex, then they won't get that same range of motion. So it definitely has to do with how the pelvis lumbar spine is being allowed to move when you're upright as compared to when you're laying down.
Diane, thank you very much. Now, Matthew, we have less than 2 minutes here. So let's go to John in Troy. John, you're on. We got to keep it fairly quick, okay?
Hello, can you hear me?
You betcha.
Okay, so I'm 62-year-old, and I had, when I was a teenager, I had a herniated disc, and I had an operation. It was a laminectomy, and then I went mm-hmm. for years and years. I became an engineer, a more sedentary occupation, as yep. they recommended. About 5 years ago or so, I hurt my back. It would flare up. Occasionally, but it would resolve after a month or so. Mm-hmm. But about 5 years, 5 or 6 years ago, I heard it. And so I did physical therapy. I went back to my back exercises, which I do every day. Mm-hmm. But I was diagnosed with stenosis.
Okay, we got 45 seconds, John. So you got to go to the Cliff Notes version here, quick.
Okay, so anyway... resolving from my last surgery, I hurt my hip also. And I don't know whether it was doing exercises, but I've been diagnosed with a torn labrum. So I was wondering, should I keep exercising, get physical therapy? What's up with
okay,
that?
Okay, good.
So the first thing, that the herniated disc from way back when is long since healed, and it's not the problem. It's one of the big myths out there that if you had a herniation once, it's still the same reason you're having back pain now. It's not doesn't work that way. Just like if you broke a bone when you were 8, you don't still have a broken bone when you're 50. So, and ironically, they told you to go into a less active lifestyle with sedentary. It's one of the worst things you can do for your spine, but we didn't know that 20, 30 years ago. So exercise-wise, everything you're doing should be helping. So if you're doing some exercise and it feels like it's agitating the hip and or the spine more, then you definitely need to have it evaluated to check A, your form, and B, to make sure it's the right exercise for you to do currently.
Okay.
Again, a lot of people get mistaken that what they did 5 years ago for their back is what they should be doing today for their back. And there are times where it needs to be tweaked. It
all
needs
right.
to be modified because it's a different condition today than it was 5 years ago.
Hey, Matthew Goodemont, we're done. Beautiful job, man. We'll talk to you next snowstorm, okay?
Sounds good, Ray.
Have a good one. Support comes from River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY Eyewear, Albany.com. Once again, thanks to Matthew Goodemont for being with us today. Thank you for the great calls and the emails, especially to Abigail in Kingston for her splendidly descriptive... Well, we know a lot about her stretching regimen now, and frankly, you couldn't hear it because we bleeped it out. But next time on the program, Amy Halloran will be here to discuss baking. That's tomorrow at 2. Meanwhile, stand by for the Capital Connection.